At the end of the day, if you die the next day, what are you going to do with it? You can't fucking take it with you, you know? So why does it fucking matter if you have passive income? I don't give a fuck, you know? So some of the times, like, the people I talk to, they're giving me all these bullshit ass advice. I don't care. You know, I'm here to have fun. I'm here to enjoy myself, you know? And I'm not one person to tell you, like, hey, you should do this. If you don't do this, then you're an idiot. No, it doesn't matter. Like, at the end of the day, I'm not going to count your pockets. Your money's your money. Enjoy it.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard. Welcome back to the Higher Standard. This show is extra special, not just because I talk to a self-made entrepreneur who's huge in fashion and entertainment. It is super well-connected, but because we came from the same place. Chris Noh of The Leverage came from the same middle school and high school that I did. We grew up essentially side by side in the same community with the same advantages and disadvantages. And while it doesn't really matter how you start, it's about how you finish. His story is a spectacular one because it preaches one of the things that I have said to people over and over and over again. If you hate what you do every single day, life is torture. But if you love what you do and you find what you're passionate about, working your ass off to become successful is just you chasing the things that you love. And it resonates with Chris's story here. I hope you enjoy it. We get in the cars, we get into some extra stuff just because, you know, we haven't talked in a very, very long time. And it was definitely a trip down memory lane. So for what it's worth, this one was extra special to me. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. When we started the podcast about entrepreneurship, we started about, you know, just business in general, a lot of the problem that I think people thought when we were starting it was that I was going to go after, you know, people that just unilaterally had success or were unilaterally failures or people that were really public figures. And I think the idea of entrepreneurship is following that journey.
Yeah.
And because I knew you since we were kids, I knew that your story was one of a self-made dude. And I thought it'd be helpful for everybody listening to kind of walk through how you got here.
Yeah. I mean, overall, like, the whole journey itself is obviously, it depends on your background, you know, where you come from, how you kind of experience growing up and stuff like that too. And obviously me and you met in middle school. Middle school is different for us. I mean, you know, we grew up in Santa Ana, very, very, you know, ghetto.
It was, man.
It was hood.
It was a dangerous place to grow up back then. People look at Santa Ana now like it's different now than it was when we were kids.
It's different. It's different to a certain standard, you know, but it's still relatively pretty bad. Obviously, you know, we grew up. I mean, obviously, I grew up in an area where, you know, I was one of the few Vietnamese Asian kids at school. It was heavily dominated by a lot of Hispanics, lot of Hispanics, you know. And so us, we grew up in like the mid-90s to the late 90s. That's the tough, tough era. You know, we grew up in the era of gangbanging, drive-bys, tagging. I mean, you think about all the stuff that we kind of grew up in, it's different. Like, this day and age, I don't think the kids in Orange County, per se, has to worry about going to the mall and getting hit up by gangsters, getting...
You remember Westminster Mall?
Oh, and yeah.
Like, there, if you were in the wrong color, people would call you out.
I mean, for us, it was just like walking down the mall and just having a group of other Asian kids, Mexican kids saying, you know, where are you from? Which is, you know, getting called, you know, hit up, you know, and that was normal. But yeah, it's wild to see like what Orange County and Santa Ana is now to what it was before.
It's so industrial now. I was telling my brother the other day that when we were growing up, I remember Harvard McFadden, which is kind of the area that I lived in before I moved,
yeah,
there were prostitutes walking up and down the street.
Man,
like, that was real.
Man, I'll tell you the story. I lived in the central of prostitutes. I lived on Harbor and Hazard. And so, so Harbor and Hazard, you remember the Harbor and Hazard. So the Harbor and Hazard, what I grew up in, is right in the corner. My my condo next to it was the Jack in the Box. And so the Jack in the Box was where they got dropped off, and they did like everything there. And so literally, I'd be sitting at this Jack in the Box eating like three tacos for 99 cents. And then you'd see hookers just walking in and out, cleaning up.
Yep.
And it was just random. I remember being 13 years old, sitting there eating a meal with my buddy Jesse and Frazier. And then, you know, a hooker coming up to us saying, you know, do you want a date? I'm like, a date? A date where? I'm 13 years old eating a damn fucking taco. I don't need a date, you know? But yeah.
It was like it was yesterday.
The wildest thing about it was just, it was normal. You know, you'd sit there and just see like street workers, hookers just walking up and down Harbor.
Yeah.
And this is like 1992 to 1999. And it was just normal.
Everywhere I went, I'll never forget.
Uh-huh.
I remember I used to go to the liquor store in the corner, and this was right when Street Fighter came out.
Yep.
And I go play Street Fighter 2 and all those games at the liquor store, but I would see the girls walk in and out.
Yep.
And I remember thinking to myself, like,
It was Cameron's Arcade there. Yeah, I know exactly where you're at. You're on Harbor McFadden, next to the McDonald's and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I used to go there all the time, man. Yeah. That was my place. I'd play the games whenever I could. And, you know, the quarter was the best thing ever. But as a kid, you don't realize how like scary it is until you get older. And we both have kids now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would never want my kid to be there.
I mean, recently too, I was actually driving down the street like maybe a few months back, and I was just like, man, it's sketchy as shit.
Yeah.
Like, but it was worse back then. But you know, you're a kid, you don't know better. And that was just normal.
So walk me through, you know, after school, like what did you do and how did you wind up with the empire that you built for yourself now?
Man, that's a long ass story. That's such a long story.
Yeah, bro, we got 40 minutes.
You got 40 minutes. I mean, you know, growing up in high school, obviously being in sports, being into fashion, you know, Michael Jordan playing a big, big role. I named my daughter Jordan. You know, sports and fashion just went like hand in hand, you know? So I was always that other kid that was considered like whitewashed because I hung out with the basketball team and stuff like that. I wasn't into gangs. I was kind of a nerd, you know what I'm saying? I was kind of a nerd. And so being Asian in like the late 90s, it's either you're a gangbanger or, you know, you're running with that crowd. And I wasn't, you know, I was hooping, had good grades, but I was into fashion. So I was into, you know, I was into Tommy Hilfiger, South Pole, FUBU.
All the brands you can't wear.
Pele.
Yeah. Huh? All the brands you can't wear today.
Yeah. And so, you know, growing up, I was always a shoe collector, and I was collecting Jordans like hella early. And so that went all the way on to college. And then in college, you know, I got into reselling sneakers, from selling Dunks to Jordans and whatnot. And, you know, that was a way for me to make like passive, you know, my income. So it'd always be like, buy two or three pairs of shoes, keep one, flip the other two, make some money, and you got your shoes for free. And so that was my thing for like the longest time.
Yeah,
but,
I still do that.
Huh?
I still do that.
I used to do that. Yeah. Like now I'm just like this avid collector where I'm just hoarding now, you know? But
I am too. I don't even wear like half of my shoes though. That's a problem.
I mean, most of us don't. But it's just the fact that you're able to get it and just like hang on to it, you know? Yeah. That was my thing. Yeah, going from that, I never thought I was going to get into fashion just based off of that. But for me, it was college for me. It was college. So in college, you know, I was having a hard ass time in college. I was on academic probation like every single semester. I graduated with like a 2.2 GPA. I had to switch my major because I couldn't pass the math. Like math, I'm Asian. I'm terrible at math. How crazy is that, right? So I remembered going, I was a business major and I couldn't pass. I don't know what kind of math it was, but I couldn't pass it. So I'd go into my administration office and I was like, hey, what's the lowest form of math I can get with the degree? They're like, if you change your major to communications, you can get out with college algebra. I was like, well, that's my new major. So, you know, I'm sitting there. I was like, all right, now I'm in advertising. So, you know, after advertising, whoopty-whoopty, my last semester, I remember they brought in somebody that was there to talk to us about their future, you know, about, you know, after you graduate, you can get a job in advertising. And they sat there in the front. And at that time, I was like, okay, I'm going to ask them questions. Like, all right, if you don't mind me asking, how much are you making? And she was like, oh, I've been here for 5 years and I'm the head of this department. I'm making $60,000 a year.
Oh, man.
And I was just like, holy shit. dude, I make almost that much selling shoes right now at Aldo. And at that time, I was like a sales rep at Aldo. I was actually the number one sales rep in the whole world at Aldo, at South Coast Plaza. I shit you not.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, I shit you not. The funny thing was, I was doing that and, you know, going through school at the same exact time. And for me, I was like, damn, I'm going to waste my time being this major to do that. Fuck that. I'm not doing that.
It's crazy. We didn't have this conversation before.
Mm-hmm.
But this is so eerily similar to my story of how I got into like banking and stuff. And I was supposed to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I found out how much the guy I was supposed to work for was making. Mm-hmm. I literally asked him at the table, I'm like, well, how much you make? He mm-hmm. was offended.
Mm-hmm.
He told me it was literally like less than half of what I was making at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, well, fuck this shit. I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, that was it. That was it. And so, you know, I graduated. And during this time I graduated, it was like the late 2003, 2004. Right. And then that was during the time everybody and their aunt was a real estate loan officer. And so I was like, you know, fuck this. I'm going to do that. All right. And so, you know, I go out, I become a loan officer. And within my third month, I became the highest grossing loan officer in the company. In my third month, I was doing like something like $20,000 like a month at that time. Being 21 years old, doing that much, you're just like, fuck, you know,
yeah.
You're just like, wow, you know, this is wild. And so, you know, I did that for a little bit of time. And then next thing you know, it just becomes a situation where, you know, my company, one day I come in and they're like, oh, you're out of business. And I was like, all right, fuck.
07, 08, somewhere in there?
No. It was like 22. Yeah, it was earlier.
Wow.
It was earlier because I was supposed to be set up to become a wholesale, work in the secondary market.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one day they just closed up the whole department and we all got laid off and we're just like, okay, well, wow. So I collect my unemployment. Long story short, I collect my unemployment and I just hang out, party, just being a dumbass 22-year-old, 23-year-old at the time.
Are you worried at this point? Like, what am I going to do? Or are you just like, look, I'm going to go with it. It's slow. Like, let's live
life. Honestly, dude, I was living in a garage. I had probably 20-something pairs of shoes, and they're all Air Jordans or whatever the fuck I had. And so I didn't care at the time, you know? I wasn't thinking about my future. I wasn't thinking about what the fuck I was going to do later or now. I was like, all right, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And so the funny thing was how it happened was one of my buddies, not even my buddy, it was my roommate. She was dating a dude that had a clothing brand. And his name is Joe. The brand's called Franco Shade. It's a rollerblading brand, but it was his first time showing at the trade show. So he was like, hey, man, I'm about to show at the trade show. You want to come out? You can help out. Kick it. Party. 4 days in Vegas. I'll take care of the hotel room. I was like, fuck.
Yeah,
I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in.
So I pull up to the trade show, and I'm just kind of hanging out, sitting there, just looking at the stuff. He had like two racks. It was like one rack here, maybe like 10 t-shirts, a couple hoodies, a couple hats. That's all it was. But for me, it was just like the gift of gab. I could sell anything. Like I could sell almost anything. And so as I was sitting there talking to him, he was like, you know, when people come in, talk to them, show them the line, see what they think. And if they want to place an order, they place an order. I was like, all right. Easy enough.
Report.
And so, you know, I'm sitting there and I see a buyer. I meet some dude outside, like by the concession stand. We're talking about shoes. He was wearing a pair of Dunks at the time, Tiffany's. I still remember this whole story. I tell the story all the fucking time. But so I sit there, we start talking about shoes, and you know, we're cool. You know, guys bond over shoes, sneakers, normal, right? Mm-hmm. And so about half an hour later, he walks by and he sees me at the booth and he's like, yo, what's up, Chris? You know, I was like, what's up? He's like, oh, you're here? I was like, yeah, let me check out your stuff. So he looks at it. And he was just like, oh, this is dope. I'll put it in my store. I was like, all right, cool. You know, what do you want? He's like, give me a 5-10-10-5 across the board. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? What the fuck is a 5-10-10-5 across the board? What does that mean? So Joe, he was like, he wants 5-10-10-5 across the board. What size? He was like, so starting from size small. So he wants 5 smalls, 10 mediums, 10 large, 5 extra large. Across the board means every single piece. And so I sit there, I tally up this order, and it comes out to be 15,000. And I was like, okay, well, what next? He was like, well, here's my info. Call me when it's ready. I'll give you my credit card. Run it. So Joe, he hits me. He was like, bro, I'm going to give you 10% of this order. I was like, what do you mean? That's like $1,500. He's like, yeah, I'll pay you $1,500 when we ship. So when I ship this and I collect the money, I'll give you 10% of this order. And so I was like, holy shit, I made $1,500. And he was like, listen, dude, you do this for the whole fucking weekend, I will pay you 10% off every order. So I sit there for 4 days talking to every person I fucking can. And so the previous show he didn't write any orders, right? And so we left that show. We wrote about 50K in orders. Like, I wrote about 50K in orders. And then I'm like, well, I made $5,000 this weekend just selling t-shirts and hoodies on this fucking two of these booths. Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, man, you should follow up with everybody. I was like, okay, you know, I got all these business cards and stuff like that. I'm not doing anything. He's like, I'll pay you under the table, bro. If you're on unemployment right now, I'll pay you under the table. I was like, fuck, I'll take it. So, you know, that Monday we got back, I take all the business cards, like every single one he has. I put in an Excel spreadsheet. I take my headset from my loan officer job. You know, back then when you used to click it, it would pop up, you know, the headsets. Yep. And so I was like, all right, cool. So what I did was, you know, I called every single person that I spoke to. I sent them out emails and followed up. I wrote 120K in orders my first season working with him.
Wow. Yeah. He must love you, dude.
Yeah. He went, yeah, obviously. I mean, we went from like a garage brand to actually a brand after the first season. So, you know, $12,000 my first season as a sales rep. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. This is cool. You know, I'm in fashion. I'm selling t-shirts, hoodies. I enjoy this. And so that was the beginning of it.
That had to be like a light bulb moment for you where like, this is where it's ready to go.
Honestly, for me, it wasn't more like a light bulb moment. It was more like I could party, I could hang out, I could be hungover and go to work and just sell t-shirts. Mm. You know, like back in the day, I'd go to work every single day wearing like a tie, suit and whatever. And I fucking hated my life.
I did it every day, man.
Fucking hated years, my life. Hated years. My life. Just clocking in, clocking out. I remember I used to walk, like wake up, walk into the office. And I go to the bathroom and make sure. And it looks like I'm taking a dump for half an hour. No, I'm just sleeping in there for half an hour. You know, and I would strategically work slow as shit just so I can get the day by.
I remember how inauthentic I felt. And I had all like designer suits, I had all that shit.
Yeah.
And you know, everything was custom made for a while. And I was really into it. I was trying to get into it. And the more I tried to get into it, the more I just didn't feel authentic.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it was me. And then when we went casual, it's funny, like everybody in my group, my office, everybody, they seem to be better with it now. Everybody mm-hmm. seems happier.
Yeah.
But for some reason, people, they have this like I don't know if it's the idea. They just register like, oh, that guy's in a suit. That person's successful. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that way anymore, though.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing was like if you think about it now, it's like some of the guys that are making the most money are guys wearing fucking sweatsuits and Air Jordans to work.
Oh, yeah. You all know? Day long.
Like, it's the first time that I could actually go to lunch and I see guys wearing suits and ties and see guys that are wearing t-shirts, hoodies, and you're just like, you, who's the CEO here? Who's making money? Who's not? Mm-hmm. You know, because like literally the guy wearing a suit and tie probably works for Farmers Insurance or like AAA. Yep. The guy that's wearing t-shirts, jeans is a cannabis dude making fucking, you know, six figures every month.
Or crushing NFTs right now.
NFTs and cryptos. Yeah. It's just all sorts of crazy shit.
It's weird. So you kind of get into this space where you like what you get culturally.
Yeah.
You think it was just because you loved what you were doing and the freedom that you had?
Yeah.
Ultimately propels you?
I mean, at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, waking up every single day doing something that you actually enjoy. You know, like even now, like I don't hate my job because I'm selling jeans. I'm selling t-shirts. I'm talking about fashion every single day. I'm not talking about spreadsheets, graphs of like numbers and, you know, analytics of anything. I'm doing a kid's job. It's like almost paying a professional athlete to play basketball. You're paying me to do what? To make jeans, to make captions on Instagram about what my product's going to look like. I mean, dude, I don't have it that hard. Even though the amount of hours that I work and every time I stress out, I look at it. I'm just like, dude, I'd rather be doing this than fucking being at a bank telling you exactly what's in your fucking a check account right now or telling me how much a fucking interest rate is.
No, it's true. Yeah. It's not... There's very few people who have that personality who can really find that kind of shit enjoyable. And we lie to ourselves because we want the paycheck.
Oh, for sure.
We lie to ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this question. I asked my wife this the other night. We were talking about our son and growing up. And I was trying to be like, I can't replicate, you know, what I went through to like give him like that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, what do you tell your kids? Like, does he go to college? Does he, I mean.
Oh, my God.
Where does
that go? It's crazy because anytime I'm in the car with my kids, I always tell them these stories. You know, when you're younger, you're telling your parents would tell you, I walk 3 miles in the fucking, in the snow to go to school.
Both ways.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, I fucking did, you know, like I literally from Harbor and Hazard, Fitz is on New Hope and McFadden. Yeah. That was 2.5 miles. I would walk that every single day to go to school back and forth, you know? And then
walk that too. God, that was such a dangerous walk.
It was such a dangerous walk. You're talking about going down New Hope and then going through an alley and then going to school at the time. Normal, you know, but now you wouldn't even let your kid walk across the street without a kid getting trafficked or something, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I would sit there. I would tell them these stories and I'm like, dude, you kids are so lucky. You're getting picked up from school. You kids are so lucky. You have options when whatever you want to eat. Like now my wife, her parents or whoever, they're like, okay, kids, what do you want to eat for lunch? What do you want to eat for dinner? shit, when I grew up, it was, this is dinner, this is lunch. Yeah, you don't have any options, yeah. You know? And it's just like now, like just comparing what we went through and what they're going to go through, it's so easy. It's like even me just telling the story over and over, for them, it's like, yeah, dad, for sure.
So that's the problem, though. Like, therein lies the issue. Like, mm-hmm. we grew up with that rough lifestyle, right? Yeah. You know, and I don't think my son's ever going to walk home from school like that, at least not in the same way. He's never going to know, you know, what eating ramen was like every single day and, like, you know, saving money to buy, like, a bottle of soda.
Yeah.
Is that going to make him soft?
100%.
That's 100%. Terrible. 100%. I mean, there's no choice, though. Like, 100%. How did you stop that?
I mean, honestly, I don't know. Like, me and my buddies, we talk about it all the time. Like, every single time, you know, we're hanging out with dads, we look at our kids and we're just like, yo, these kids are going to grow up so soft.
Yeah.
So soft, because they don't have any needs. They get everything, you know? Like, literally, when we were little, we're looking through, like, a FETCO magazine or, like, a newspaper or an East Bay, and we're circling shit that we liked. Like, oh, I can't wait to one day be able to get the Air Jordan 11s or the Air Max 95s. You know what I'm talking about?
Bro, I coveted the 11s so much. Never got them. And that's why today, like, every time a new version comes out, a new colorway, I'm all over it.
Yeah, and for us, it's like, I was like, damn. I look at whatever's come out and I'm buying it for the kids without them even asking. You know what my son wants for Christmas? He wants a fucking Apple 13 Max. I was like, what 6-year-old asks for an Apple 13 Max?
And it's funny because we grew up I was trying to explain to my friend's little brother the other day how payphones work.
Yeah, yeah.
And how a beeper worked.
Yeah.
A pager. And he was like, why would you send numbers to it? Why wouldn't you send letters? Yeah. Why wouldn't you have like text to voice to text? I'm like, bro, it doesn't work that way.
They didn't have that.
Well, dude,
and then we tried to crack it. Do you remember back in the day there was alphanumeric where would it, like, you know, let's just say like number one is an I, number C was a 6, and you would make little codes to say like call me back or like, you know, I'm over here. It's crazy. I mean, we went to an era that was so prehistoric.
And to see now is. It's amazing to see where everybody's gone with it, but I've been able to keep up to date with you on social media, and it's been really cool to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, let me ask you this. Now that you have, like, the social media platform, the company's running,
mm-hmm.
you've got to have, like, dreams and goals for what comes next.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What's the ideal set of circumstances for you and the brand?
Honestly, for me, everybody has an exit strategy. My exit strategy is to be bought. You know, obviously you build the top line, you know, you make sure your business is tight. You give the person that's going to be able to look at your company and evaluate it and be like, hey, you know, they're doing so and so and so, you know, I could pour gas on this and take them to, you know, XYZ. You know, honestly, my goal is to get bought by somebody big. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a Revolve, whether it's a LVMH, whether it's like a New Guards Group. End of the day, I know the structure that we have right now, it's almost like a plug and play. You know, the beautiful thing about us is that, you know, we're still independently funded. Till this day, me and my business partner, Lee, we literally, everything here, it's out of our own pocket. We never taken a business loan besides, obviously, the loan for the SBA for the building that we own. Yeah. But all the materials, all this is just us flipping every single cent that we put in over and over and over just to put back into the company. So at the end of the day, you know, being in the business for 10 years, I want to get an exit strategy to get bought, take care of, you know, my top employees. Everybody walks around with a 7-figure check and call it a day.
It's funny. So a lot of kids will come up to me and they'll ask me like, you know, hey, if I had $1 million, I would do X, Y, and Z. And I always look at them and say, like, you wouldn't know what the first thing to do.
Hell no.
But you look at your sales experience, and you kind of look at the trajectory, right?
Mm-hmm.
That first day you were selling something and you closed it.
Mm-hmm.
You've always kind of been good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And now look how significant that direction's going. You're looking at selling like major brands. Well, you're looking at those connections. That's a huge leap.
The strongest thing is like you always buy low, sell high. You know, people talk about that all the time. It's always buy low, sell high, whether you're buying Air Jordans at retail and flipping them for 2.5 margin, or you're buying a box of ramen with 20 bags in it as a kid. And then, you know, what was it? $5 for a box. You sell it for $1 each. You're $15 on a 5. It's normal. Yeah. You know, and that was like my mentality as a little kid growing up. It's like, okay, what can I sell and what can I make money off of? At the end of the day, that was like my motto, was just buy low, sell high.
So let me ask you this. That happens.
Yeah.
You get a check.
Mm-hmm.
You're happy. You don't have to work.
Yeah.
Do you work? Do you do it again?
You know, honestly, it depends on where I'm at. Obviously, now I just turned 40 this year. I'm not going to stop working. I literally, yeah, way too young. And, you know, I just got off of vacation in Bahamas. Most people would have just said, taken the rest of the week off. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. I enjoy going into work. You know, that's like my thing is like working, making sure that, you know, the shit that goes on, you know, the lights are still here. Everything's running well. For me, I don't see myself quitting anytime soon. Even if I sold the company, it'd be a situation where me, my business partner, I guarantee whoever buys us or if we do ever get bought, they'd probably want us to be on at least 2 to 5 years for sure, yeah. Just to make sure the transition is right. And, you know, never know. Maybe I might start another brand, get into another occupation, sell another product, get into the car industry. Who fucking knows?
I'll never forget the car industry is such like a thing. Both of us obviously love cars,
oh, yeah.
Right? And yeah. I've had so many goddamn SEMA builds go south on me in the last couple of years. Yep. But if you could relive life and go back in time and buy that one car you could drive back then, not what you have now,
mm-hmm.
What would you pick?
Back then? So back then, I would have bought the E30 M3 earlier.
Earlier.
So like, okay. So I think it was just like 2000. I want to say it was a 2011, 2010. Mm-hmm. So instead of, I bought a Porsche 996.
Yeah.
I bought a Porsche 996 and it was between that or E30 M3. And at the time, the E30 M3 was like $10,000 to $12,000.
They're so much more expensive right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, you know what? Yes, it was $12,000 because I remember I had $15,000 to spend and I ended up buying the 996 instead of getting the E30 M3 just because it was faster. But shit, that 996, it's probably worth like $25,000, $30,000 now. The E30 M3 now is like anywhere from $70,000 to $90,000.
I saw one on Bring a Trailer the other day go for like $110,000.
Yeah, that it's crazy.
The market is insane right now. And we started building the E9 that we're building.
Yep.
It's a 2800 CS. And I saw one on Bring a Trailer go for six figures the other day. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, this market's nuts, right?
Honestly, this market is so fake. Like,
it can't
be
real.
It's so infatuated, everything from the cars, houses, and watches. Like, all the luxury market, the prices are ridiculous
right now.
The
watch game right now.
Watch game is sick.
The fact that you can go into a store and you can't buy a watch because they're sold out. Like, that's insane to me.
I like the fact that you go into Rolex and they're like, by the way, all these watches, they're all displays. They're not even real. We don't have any watches to sell you.
Someone literally said to me the other day when I walked in and I'm like, what do you mean they're all? I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I'm shocked they had inventory. And he's like, oh, no, they're all display.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that even mean? He had to tell me, like, look, we have them here just to show you what you can order if you go on a waiting list for months, if not a year.
I was in the Bahamas and they had a Rolex store, but they actually had inventory. Walked in, they don't have display watches. They only have three watches. I was like, she's like, yeah, these are the three watches we have. And it's just Women's Day Just 30, Women's Day Just, like the little tiny ones. What is that? 31 millimeter?
Yeah.
Three watches. So I was like, so you're going to be standing here all day trying to sell these three watches. The only three watches we have.
For
she's
sure.
Like, yeah. I come back the next day. They only have one watch left.
Crazy. Yeah. That just shows you how much alcohol is going on in the Bahamas.
Yeah,
too.
Seriously.
People drinking that much, that's what they want to buy, right?
Seriously.
So you have the car collection, which I got to say is an awesome collection. Which one's your favorite?
Honestly, the E30 M3.
Is it really?
Yeah, the E30 M3.
My favorite too.
Yeah, like I put it through a whole restore, rebuilt the motor. When I pulled the motor out, I was like, shit, I might as well just paint the shit.
Have you driven it?
Yeah. It was getting restored for like almost 10 months.
Oh, okay.
And so I got it back like a couple of weeks ago. I've driven it like a few times, but I mean, the shit's, it's slow as shit, but it's beautiful though.
Yeah. Holding the nostalgia, man. You can't get that back.
For sure. I mean, it's either that or the, you know, CRX. I love the CRX. That's like my first car in high school.
I love the CRX. I had a 91 Honda Accord LX. I remember I saved so much for that. Oh my. I had it dropped on NeoSpeed springs, some really cheap rims that I couldn't afford better back then.
It was probably some like TSWs or something.
Yeah, it was bad. It was so bad. I would never in my adult life actually put those on a car.
Yeah.
But it's funny. The car industry to me is kind of like on so much parallel now with fashion.
Oh, yeah.
Like everybody you see, it's funny. Like everybody that was a kid that grew up in that era kind of elevated the same way where we all have like this weird infatuation with cars, with clothes, and kind of like a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder, you know, when our kids grow up, are they going to go back to that suit life? Are they going to go back to that? Or is this permanent?
You know, the crazy thing is right now is all my friends that have kids that are in middle school, they look like us in middle school. These kids are they're dressed exactly like us.
Really?
Yeah. Do you remember like in middle school, we were wearing like baggy pants,
oh, yeah.
Baggy pants, that tagger look, mm-hmm. with like JNCOs and baggy pants. It looks like the kids, the movie.
Yeah.
and the girls were wearing crop tops, long socks, you know, like waistband shorts.
It's like a little bit of a throwback right now.
Oh my God. I was recently in San Diego and I went to like I went to a supermarket like on the way to a trip, and the kids were out from school. It was a middle school. Every kid was dressed exactly alike, and I was like, holy shit, this is like me in middle school right now. It's wild.
If kids start rollerblading, bro, I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, my God.
I can't imagine that.
No. They're not doing that.
I saw this dude on I was on TikTok the other day, who's literally wearing the old school JNCOs, like with the rollerblades on.
Yep.
And has a whole TikTok page dedicated to it.
Yep.
And I'm not going to lie, I spent like a good 15, 20 minutes checking out his page. My wife came over. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, no, listen, I don't ever talk about this publicly, but I was watching this dude. I showed her, and she's like, you seriously got issues. It's a throwback, man. And I love the kind of vibe of how kids are going. But what's really tripping me out with some of these kids, though, is like some of the music stuff that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling Joanna, my wife, last night.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get new hip hop. I don't get new rap.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to disrespect anybody, but some of the mumble stuff and some of these names, like, I feel like it's falling off.
I mean, it's just a different era. It's like older guys like us. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a part of the older guys because I like some of this new stuff. It's catchy. It's different, though.
Which new stuff?
It's just different. Yeah. Like, obviously, you know, you got the Drakes. You got the Drakes, the J. Cole's and stuff like that. That's great. Yeah. But, you know, I understand, like, the Lil Uzi Verts, Trippy Reds, and all the other stuff. It's different, though. It's very different. I mean, we grew up in, like, the backpack era. The backpack hip hop era, when everybody was talking about being a lyricist, you know, actually rhyming, flowing, all that other stuff. Now it's just about beats and a party and like a vibe. And how I kind of feel about it too is that, you know, I don't complain about it. It's because it's for the youth. You know, music now, I feel it's for the youth. And I'm going to be the last one to talk down on somebody's music, because do you remember when we grew up, like the guys that are older than us talking shit about us listening to Tupac and Biggie?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it's like
all day long.
It's exactly like the same shit now. It's like, so to hear someone like my age be like, oh, this youth, they're listening to this bullshit. I'm like, dude, the music's for the youth. Let them have their shit. We had our moment when our fucking uncles and parents were like, yo, what the fuck are you listening to?
True.
So it's like the same exact thing. I mean,
I can't believe that guy calls himself a dog and talks about bitches all the time.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Talk. I mean, listen to Notorious Thugs. Like, that literally is a song to hype you up on a drive-by.
Oh, yeah. That's what half the rap songs were back then. I mean, but in the East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah.
So, you're making clothes. Like, you're designing for a space. You're designing for all ages, really. But there's a younger spin to it, right?
Yeah. I mean.
So, how much of the music industry and the cars and all that is reflective of what you're planning for?
I mean, honestly, right now, it's the culture. Yeah. I would say the culture. I mean, from shoes, cars, music, it all ties together with like, the fashion. You know, everybody looks at everything as a part of the culture, like basketball. You know, a couple years ago, you wouldn't look at basketball player as a fashion icon, but because the league fits and what's going on now, you're looking at guys like Kelly Oubre that really isn't an NBA star, but he's a fashion icon. You know, younger guys like LaMelo Ball, other guys like, you know, D'Angelo Russell, guys that aren't superstars, but yet they're a fashion icon.
Pop culture icons.
Yeah.
It's funny because their social media profiles are so much more than just like sports now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this whole like culture. Do you think they influence the way everybody else is dressing because of how they dress? Or do you think it has more to do with their mimicking what they see? Or how does that?
Honestly, it's a good trickle effect, because the grandfather of this is Swaggy P. You know, Swaggy P was the first like basketball player that was actually into fashion. And because of him, you had like the tree, you know, Jordan Clarkson's, D'Angelo Russell's, and all these guys that are Kyle Kuzma, who pretty much they make it a big thing to walk down the runway, like Russell Westbrook's and all those guys run down the walk to practice or walk to the game fitted. You know, obviously league fits started because of this, you know? And so almost every basketball player, even us, we focus on doing a lot of product placements with celebrities and especially basketball players.
Mm. It's funny to see how that comes back full circle. You grew up playing basketball, right? You grew up in the culture.
Yeah.
And now that's the same culture that helps you jump off and build your brand.
But the thing about it that works for us is it's authentic. You know,
yeah, like it's what you love, right?
Yeah, it's authentic. You know, I'm into fashion, I'm in basketball. So, you know, when I'm speaking to some of these basketball players or their managers or their agents, they know I'm not just making this up. You know, they're like, okay, well, this guy's for real. He's into the sports. He knows everything about it. But yet he's also a fashion guy. So that's the reason why our success is actually organic. Because when I'm talking about it, I'm not an older, middle-aged, you know, bald dude that's just trying to, how do you say, trying to just make a dollar off of someone younger. I'm actually about the culture. I'm actually about the sport. I'm actually about the fashion. That's the reason why, like I said, me and my business partner, we've been able to elevate our company the way we have.
So I've been kind of going on this line of questioning with you because it's so obvious when someone knows you and talks to you that authenticity plays a huge role in your success.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think a lot of people, especially the younger generation, they fall short on is they get this idea in their head that they have to be X, they have to be Y.
Yeah.
And really, you have to be you, right? Yeah. That's kind of what you're saying this whole time.
I mean, honestly, dude, I've never ever wanted to be a person with a platform to tell you exactly what you should and shouldn't do. Because like some of the times, like, you know, I'm not saying anything about my homies, but like some of the advice they have, it's like, dude, the chances of them doing that, it's not going to happen. You know, like all these influencers that tell you, you need to buy this before buy that. The only way you should buy a luxury car or a watch is that you need to make $1 million to have in your back pocket. Who gives a fuck? You know, at the end of the day, you're here for a good time, not a long time, you know? And so how I feel is this, whatever money you make, what do you ever want to do with it? It's your money. You know, if you want to fucking buy a Rolex, buy a fucking Rolex. You want to buy a Ferrari, go buy a fucking Ferrari. Who gives a fuck? You know, true. At the end of the day, if you die the next day, what are you going to do with it? You can't fucking take it with you, you know? So why does it fucking matter if you have passive income? I don't give a fuck, you know? So some of the times, like the people I talk to, they're giving me all these bullshit ass advice. I don't care. You know, I'm here to have fun. I'm here to enjoy myself, you know? And I'm not one person to tell you like, hey, you should do this. If you don't do this, then you're an idiot. No, it doesn't matter. Like at the end of the day, I'm not going to count your pockets. Your money's your money. Enjoy it.
And it's yeah, you're here for a lifetime, you know, but you're here to live it. And that's, that's such a great quote. What I will say, too, is, you know, I see so many of these influencers online, like, showing, like, bad financial advice, too. It's like the ones who give it are specifically giving bad advice for, reason. Like, they're trying to, like, and I don't know if it's influence or just trying to dissuade people or live a lifestyle, but, you know, so much of what we do for a living now actually does influence people, right?
You're
using social media, but it's also a two-way street. It's a living business card for you, right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So how often do people like misjudge your life because of what they see?
I mean, honestly, I try to not be so serious on my social media. If you pay attention to like all the stuff that I post, it's just like, it's just humor, you know? It's just humor. I never take myself seriously just because at the end of the day, you know, the person that takes themselves too seriously, you're usually a jackass. You know, like for me, I'm an open book. Like if you ask me any questions, I'll give you my advice, but I'm not going to tell you exactly what you should or shouldn't do. I mean, if you go through my page, it's light. You know, like I said, I always try to keep everything super, super light because that's just me. Because like at the end of the day, I'm pretty much Switzerland. You know, like when we have situations with COVID, like I have friends on this side and I have friends on that side.
God, me too. You know? It's so political though.
Yeah, it's super
and
political.
It's so, like, so unnecessary. Yeah. People get like real mad.
Yeah.
Fights over it. It's not even, it's, well, and now you're wearing an Apple Watch, which, by the way, welcome to the team.
Yeah.
for a man who's into the watch game, it goes to show you the sign of the times. I don't know about you, but all this political bullshit, I try to like avoid all of it. But one thing I will say is like I'm scared of like some of the violence right now.
Oh, the violence,
LA.
Oh, the violence is crazy right now. That's the reason why I'm just like, yo. Until further notice, I'm not wearing nothing nice. Like if you're gonna try to jack me here, go ahead, take this Apple Watch. It's cool.
Yeah.
End of the day, you know, I know where I'm at right now. I'm a target, you know, especially being in Orange County, having a nice car and stuff like that too. But I'm also no dummy, you know, I'm going to put my head in a swivel and not like cause attention to myself. At the end of the day, you know what it is. It's everybody's looking for the next big lick, you know, and the last thing you want to do is put yourself in that situation where you're going to get jacked at the mall, supermarket, or wherever you go. And it's sad. It's super sad, man. Yeah,
like,
it's super sad.
Like all these things I'm seeing online are like kids or older people that are crossing the street or picking some food up to get jacked.
Oh,
and then
man.
I sit here thinking to myself, like, you know, for me, like I'm tall, I stand out just because I'm taller than people. And
yeah.
I always get looked at as a target. And I'm sitting here going like, man, like I don't want to wear anything nice.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy.
But it's so sad though. You work so hard to achieve like your trophy. You know, I call it trophies, you know, your car, your watch or jewelry, whatever it is, that's your trophy. Mm-hmm. And you can't even rock your trophy around because you're scared about getting jacked. And it's crazy, though, because if you kind of rewind back to 2016, 2017, man, I was driving a fucking Aventador wearing a chain and a fucking Richard Mille watch. And I had no issues anywhere. I wasn't scared for shit. Now, dude, I can't even leave my house without, you know, looking around and seeing who's following me or whatever now. Just because, like, it's a pretty crazy time right now.
It is. And even my wife and I, like, we were thinking about moving just because, I mean, stuff like this, the podcast, some of the stuff that we do that's social.
Mm-hmm.
People, they feel like they for some reason, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but they look at your social media, they think they know you on some level.
Yeah, 100%.
And when you put yourself out there, people feel like they can come to you and have conversations. I had a dude literally threaten to like come find me and my son. on social media because he didn't like what I had to say about real estate finance. And I'm like, yo, like, what world are you living in, dude? Well, you think that's okay to like pop off? Guy sends me my home address.
Oh.
Like via Instagram. And I'm like, oh God, like this is where we're at.
Yeah.
So now I'm considering like, do we move? Like, that's, you know, what do we do?
Honestly, that's wild. That's wild.
People take that's the other thing about this generation too. I think is crazy. It's not the kids or the people. It's just technology gives access to so much information.
Dude, like you can find out anything on anybody with just like a couple of clicks on the computer. It's wild.
Look, man, I want to be respectful of your time. Mm-hmm. I promise you 40 minutes. We're getting real close to that.
Yeah.
But I want to let everybody know where they can find you, where they can find your brand. Like, mm-hmm. what's the best way to follow up with you and check out what you do?
Oh, man, I got a lot going on. So my personal social media page is Chris_TheLeverage. A couple of the brands that we own is Embellish NYC, House of Junior, HAUSOFJR, Crisp Denim, CRYSPDENIM. Lifted Anchors. Man, what else do we... Hey, G, what else do we got?
Keep it going. Let's go.
Yo, Club Paradise, Richie Lee Collection, just to name a few.
This is why I let you say it instead of me.
Yeah, I know, man. Like, honestly, it gets to the point where, like, I don't like talking about specific brands that I own. I just tell everybody, I'm a back-end guy. I'm a manufacturer guy. I'm just a dude that makes sure that your manufacturing is done, your product's getting delivered, the stores are getting the product right. The real guys behind the brands are all the guys that are the designers, my business partners. I'd like to give them all a shout out to Richie Lee with Richie and Tan. Obviously, Lifted Anchors with Derek, Felipe, Club Paradise with Matt, Embellish and Chris. Well, obviously, my business partner Lee, he's up there. He's actually the mastermind behind everything. He's the one that designs 99.9% of the whole collection. So he's the reason why we're kind of here right now. And shit, anybody else? House of Junior, that's actually me. So that's the only thing I actually design is the kids' clothes. So everything else is just everybody else. I'm not taking no credit at all for anything.
And can we give one special shout out to Min, the man with the drip?
Oh, dude, Mun's too rich right now, dude. He's out there. He's out there just chilling right now.
If you ever get the chance to look at Chris's page and you happen to catch his stories at the right time, you will see a man so drippy, it's going to change your day.
All right? Mun.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate everything, man.
Oh, for sure, man. Brother. Thank you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you are listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. You're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.